This is Supply Chain Innovators, the show that helps supply chain leaders get ahead of the curve and prepare the organizations for the rapid trends that lie ahead. I'm your host, Taylor Camarena. Let's jump in. Hello, today I'm speaking with Curtis Treiber, the CEO and co-founder of XO Freight, the first managed transportation marketplace built for open deck shippers and carriers. Thank you so much, Curtis, for hopping on.
Yeah, thank you, Taylor. Thank you for having me. Happy to be a part of the show.
Yeah, excited to have you. So before we dive in here, do you want to start us off with a bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, I'm Curtis, co-founder and CEO of XO Freight. I've been in transportation and technology combined for, I'd say, my entire professional career. So since about 2012, I have worked alongside my co-founder, which is also my identical twin brother, in pretty much every endeavor that we've ever done. So we started out owning a traditional freight brokerage back in 2012. In 2018, we moved to San Francisco and helped found a technology company to build technology for freight brokerages. And then 2020, during the pandemic, we launched XO Freight. So I've definitely been involved in a couple of different parts of not only just logistics, but also the technology piece.
Nice. Can you start us off with the background and then jump into how you're helping companies?
So the backstory is, you know, XO Freight really is like a combination of the last 10 years of my life and as well Chris's. When we started out in logistics, it was very, like, we didn't know a lot about logistics, but we knew like how to start a business. We knew how to like solve problems. And logistics is literally solving problems every single day. So it was like a really interesting business to be a part of because it was always moving. It was never the same. There was always new challenges. And you just sort of had a lot of room to run in logistics. So in 2015 or 16, we actually were trying to grow that company and we ran into a problem where, you know, if we were going to go out and like take on an investment or something, what we realized was like our company didn't like have any physical value. It was people in an office that sort of talked to shippers and carriers, but like our actual company, there's nothing there. It's like dudes with laptops, right? Like that's really what it is. And so we said, okay, if this company is going to be valuable, and this is not XO Freight, this is our first company, we should start creating some technology. And at that exact moment, Chris, like at the same time, like he's a self-taught full stack engineer. So he locked himself in his office for 60 days and like built a version of a transportation management system that we actually launched at our first company and actually operated that business on a piece of like homegrown technology that he built while learning to code, which was pretty interesting in itself. So kind of fast forward as we realize that building technology actually like created value inside of a company, like really a service-based business, you know, to create value, you need like something that we own, right? At the same time, so we launched this in like 2017. And at the same time, like Uber Freight and like Convoy had like entered the logistics market. And so we're sort of in this like weird moment where, you know, if you can think back as long ago as that was, the taxi industry had just been annihilated by Uber or, you know, something, some version of that, at least in the US. You had Lyft coming in competing and sort of, we saw that logistics was a very similar business model to like the taxi industry. And we felt that like these companies would try to come in and eat up the small like freight brokerages like us, right? We are a small $10 million business. That's a drop in the bucket for logistics. It's not even a drop, it's a speck. And so in 2018, with that being said, after we built a piece of technology, you know, we said, hey, we need to change, we need to focus and change our path a bit. So we moved to San Francisco. We met a couple of co-founders that were trying to build something for logistics. They sort of were just coming off of a pivot. They were younger than us. They were newer to logistics than us, but they had a very big technology background. And so we met them and they sort of pitched a few ideas of like what product they think they should bring to market to sell to freight brokerages. On the premise, which is weird, they have the same theory as us that the Uber and the Convoy would try to sort of annihilate the small incumbent freight brokerage. And so we all decided to band together and we built a technology that we would sell to really the companies that were like Chris and I's first company. And that went well. I led sales. Chris was my solutions implementation engineer. And then like the other three guys just like wrote code, right? Mm-hmm. And during that time, Chris and I spent 2.5 years there together and we basically, at that time, freight tech or logistics tech was like, there was like not really a lot. There was like a handful of companies in San Francisco, call it five, you know, outside of like the Convoys and the Ubers of the world, right? And so we actually, when we traveled around the country, or when I traveled around the country, like I got to sit down with everybody, the CEO of Echo, Schneider, like any logistics company you've ever seen or heard of, like I got to go hang out with them because they're excited that people were building technology for the space because it's not really a thing, right? And so after 2.5 years, you know, kind of going back to like how ExoFreight became a thing, by accident, I guess, we realized that trucking and transportation and full truckload, like in the US or domestic, is actually like way bigger than any one company. C.H. Robinson, I don't know, 2% market share, they're a $23 billion company. Uber Freight is, I think they're tracking on, well, now they just acquired Transplace, so they're probably tracking somewhere in the $12 to $13 billion range, maybe a percentage, right? Like, and so as I started to look at that and said, okay, like these companies that 5 years ago I thought were going to like destroy the industry, they're actually like only winning like not even a percent, which is like, it means there's just a lot of room for optimization still. And so as I looked at like anything new that was like coming out, everybody was attacking the same space. So when I was at Parade, I looked at, you know, every single customer that we had. And I said, what do all these customers do? And what do they not do? Meaning like freight brokerages. And some of the digital freight brokerages that I mentioned were also customers of ours. So we had a really good like data set. And every single person was doing like a certain part of domestic truckload, like the dry van or temperature control, like domestic, middle mile. It was just like the same thing over and over and over. And they all worked with the same customers. You sort of saw the same names just popping up in every customer that we had. And so I said, okay, that's what they're doing well. What are they not doing well? And as I had conversations with these companies, it was always this, the question that I would ask is like, why don't you ever move like flatbed freight? Like you're working with X customer. We all know that they have meaningful like spend in the space. You're all, you know what I mean? Like you can just ask for it and they'll probably just give it to you, right? It's that easy. And the response that I got, like these companies that are already at scale were just simply saying things like, it's not our focus. We don't really have any people that know a lot about it. We don't really have any carriers that do it. So like, why bother? We're already doing $50 million a year with Walmart. We're maxed out. You know what I mean? Like, why would we go to this other space? And so then I started asking the question of like, well, what if I went and built the next like digital freight brokerage that just services open deck? You know, you guys being sort of the big players in the room, like where does that put me from a competitive landscape to all of you? And a lot of them said like, you should go build this. In fact, I'll even be a customer, right? Like, we don't care. Like, there's a big enough pie for all of us, right? And so long story short, how ExoFreight became a thing was really just a culmination of technology is really challenging in logistics. And oftentimes the people that build the technology need to have like an entrenched background to really understand the nuances that they're building for. And then for us, it was like, we clearly had this like opportunity. And the best way to start a business is just like serve a need, right? If somebody's got a scratch, itch it. And so 2020, we founded ExoFreight. And it wasn't even ExoFreight to begin with. It was like our old brokerage that we just rolled over and said, let's restart the old company that we had and put a spin on it. And for the first year, you know, we just bootstrapped it. And we actually closed our first customer, which was Walmart, under the old company. And then so ExoFreight really was born when we raised our first round of capital the following year. So I think ultimately, you know, for us, it's been, this is a big gap and we're just going to build the company to do it better than anybody's been doing it thus far.
Wow. Great backstory. I was taking notes like twin brother duo to the max. Yes. That's pretty cool. And then the Uber, have you seen the Uber documentary?
I have. Yes.
Yeah. So good. Yep.
There's a lot of similarities, I'd say. I mean, not the negative stuff, but building this business, I can reference parts of his story that are like, man, we're kind of going through that same pain, right? Like it's very similar.
Definitely. So how was your last funding round?
Yeah, so we did in 2021, we raised $1 million from three investors. I think largely that first round was raised on two twin brothers. One's a full stack engineer and both know logistics. Like that's a bet worth taking. That's really what it was at that point. But then subsequently after that round, like, so before we even got to our Series A, it was kind of interesting. The person that led our seed round, who I'm dear friends with today, even still, he asked us, he was like, hey, like, I just went to YC demo day. You guys should join YC. And I was like, well, I guess we could do that. But like, that's really going to put your investment's going to change dramatically if I take their money, right? Just because how the economics of it work. And it was interesting. He actually said, he's like, I'm actually going to waive all of those rights. And I don't really care about my investment because I want you to go to YC that bad. And like, I'll make sure that you get in. And I'm like, okay, cool. So we did our application in September and got accepted by Michael Seibel, you know, into YC. And then so fast forward to 2022. So just this year, we did the winter 22 batch. So May or January 1 to like March, the end of March is that time frame. So it's about 3 months. And then during that 3 month period, at about the beginning of March, we started conversations with a firm called Left Lane Capital. So they were the first firm that had, you know, we had sort of engaged with, or they actually hunted us down and they wanted to raise our Series A. And so me being the conscious founder that I am, I said, don't marry the first, you know, person you meet, right? I went and had probably 100 VC. So after I got out of the meeting with Left Lane, they had put terms that I loved and the people were great. They like got on an airplane within like 10, you know, not even 24 hours. And were like in my office, like, you know, trying to lock down the deal. They were pushing really, really hard, which was great. It was exciting. It was nice to be one. You know, but everybody in my ear is saying like, don't take the deal, like go shop it around, right? Initial meeting, they just said like, can we do the same terms, but give you double the money? And I'm like, if it's too good to be true, like it's too good to be true. Like that's the, you know, everybody's heard that statement, right? And so I went and shopped it around, and not to be like negative about it, because I actually really did like the people and I still like them today. They led the round. But, you know, after every single VC meeting after that, I got a no from every single person we talked to. And it wasn't because they didn't like the business, and it wasn't because they didn't like the valuation or they didn't like this. It was purely because, which I thought was really funny, every VC told me this. They said, when you came into the meeting and you told us about the term sheet that you had, like we could tell that you really liked the person that you were dealing with there. We could tell that the deal you were getting there was actually really good, like whether we match it or not. And a lot of times what they would say is like, for those two reasons, for me to actually invest in your company, I have to not only match them, but I have to pay to make you like me more than that guy. And like, that's the amount of money that I'm not willing to do. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Like, that's not a no to me. That's like a, you have a good deal. Like, stop wasting both of our times. Right. So the Series A was a little weird in the sense that like, we closed it very quickly. We were able to negotiate a deal that we absolutely loved. And we were able to negotiate with like people that are very, very well respected in the industry. So funny enough about Left Lane, they started their firm about the same time we started ExoFreight. So they've only been around for about 3 years. But prior to that, these guys were, I mean, we're the same age, so we're all in our 30s, right? But they were heavy hitters at Insight. And so they've got a reputation sort of in the venture capital world that they're to be respected. And so they actually raised a $2 billion fund in 3 years. And so it was really interesting to like partner with somebody like that, because you could tell these guys hustle. Like during COVID, they raised $2 billion, the most ever raised for like a young VC firm. Like there's a stat that they're sort of like, you know, holding on to. And so we just got, you know, a little bit of luck, but like we found a VC that just like hustles just as hard as we do, if not potentially harder.
So who's your ideal customer? Can you kind of walk us through an example of how you do your onboarding?
Yeah. So at a high level, our business is fairly simple to understand. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle. And on one side, we have our demand, which is our customer. And our customer needs shipments moved from A to B. And the way that we fulfill that demand is we partner with owner-operator truck drivers, you know, people that own a truck and a trailer, or maybe it's a few trucks, a few trailers. And we're just matching those two together to execute the shipment, right? So our ideal customer, you know, which actually goes into like, you know, why, you know, we've been able to close like pretty big logos, is we want the customer that is eager to work with Uber Freight, but they move flatbed freight, so they can't work with Uber Freight. And so like what that means is like oftentimes we'll have customers that will, you know, come to us or we'll go to them and they'll say, hey, like we love all the things they're doing for like Uber, LoadSmart, all these big like digital firms. Like we're super excited about what they're doing in the respective space that they're doing it. You know, how do we get that for flatbed freight? And that's really been like that sort of alignment. Those are the customers we're looking for. Somebody that's like ready to kind of go into the next step of logistics. They want a little more visibility. They want like instant pricing. They want to like just have a more digital relationship with their provider versus like emails and phone fax, right? From a size perspective, I mean, we work with everybody. We've got customers at the very, very top of the probably stores you walked into 100 times in your life, right? And then we've got the customers that you've never heard of that are also mega, you know, very large, but they're in industries that the average person has never even heard of or been a part of, right? But one thing that's like common across all of our customers is they got to move flatbed freight. And that's what sort of kind of differentiates us because, you know, a customer has 18,000 options to work with freight brokerages if they're trying to move domestic truckload transportation. That could be US, Canada, and Mexico. What they don't have is options that come in the door and say, you have flatbed freight and I can move it and I can handle it. And I can also do all the really cool digital things to like make your supply chain easier. And so those are the sort of like the alignment that we look for in our customers, big, small, like doesn't matter the size, but you've got to have flatbed freight. And that's the value we provide because we want to provide like the level of execution that you otherwise really haven't been getting from like the other providers that you have.
And you chose flatbed freight. Why again?
Because it's really the overlooked, right? So if you are, I don't know, let's take a C.H. Robinson, for example. Let's take Echo. Let's take these big heavy hitter logistics companies. It's just not something that they usually do as well as other modes, right? It's often the black sheep. It's just harder, right? Mm-hmm. And so the opportunity is a lot of the customers that will go to them and say, hey, would you do this? The conversation usually goes, we'll do it. We're not that good.
We can do anything,
but like, mm-hmm. We don't really want to do that. We really want to do this other thing you have. Because we get that, we'll try to muck our way through this, right? That's sort of the persona. And so, you know, knowing that, the opportunity is if we go to a customer and we say, hey, we only focus on this, it really allows the customer to say, hey, I'm onboarding you or you're bringing you in as a vendor because like you are solving this gap that I have. Whether you participate in like the greater part of our transportation network, like if you can do this, you can do whatever you want here versus like, okay, well, I've got 18,000 people here. Explain to me why I should put 18,001 here. Like you're not providing anything different than the other people we have here, right? So it's just, again, filling a massive gap in the industry.
Nice. So what makes you so excited for, you know, XO's Freight's future? Where are you guys heading to next?
So as much as excited as I get about moving freight for customers, that's just the first piece of XO Freight.
I had a feeling.
Yeah. It is the, you know, we have a theory that the winners in this industry will be the people that actually put skin in the game and not try to dance around the execution, right? And what I mean by that is at our last company, we built matching algorithms and all these different really cool products for a freight brokerage. But at the end of the day, like the freight brokerage was always king because like they owned the load and had the relationship with the shipper. So like from our perspective, we were like a tech company that was like easy to get rid of. Right. Like if things got tight, we would just be fired the next day because like at the end of the day, loads have to move and our software didn't like necessarily do that. Right. So like the first, when we started the company, we said, no matter what we do, we always have to have a relationship with the shipper and a carrier to make sure that people know that we're serious and we have skin in the game and we want to provide good solutions because like we're right in the trench with those other two parties. Right. Now that we've done that, you know, 2.5 years in, we're actually sort of expanding on the software side to say, okay, we're doing that really well. That's fine. We can land a customer. We can move their freight. We can onboard carriers. We have all the tools in between to help our operations team do that really, really well. But now we're looking down to, well, now we've got 12,000 flatbed carriers that are essentially captive customers of XO Freight. What about their life or what about their business is like eating away from them, right? So you think about things like, everything that a trucking company has to deal with outside of driving the truck. Factoring freight, you know, they have capital problems, they have insurance problems, they have equipment problems, they have challenges with bank accounts, they have challenges with like everything outside of driving the truck. And so XO Freight, much like how we've been servicing the sort of like undesired, like open deck shipper or the undesired section or of a shipper's network, we want to do the same for our flatbed drivers to say, hey, now that we've got a relationship and we're giving you the loads that you want, what else can we give you, right? And so the next quarter, we've got two financial products rolling out that will be geared directly to our carriers on our platform, where they'll be able to access financial factoring right inside the carrier portal that they're using every single day. And then they'll also get access to a corporate charge card where, you know, we're helping solve like some near-term capital issues with our customers and our carriers, right? Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, a trucking company can't get a giant credit card or a charge card that's like more than $3,000. Banks don't really like them, but we love them. Wow. Right? And we know their business.
Yeah. Wow. So this is something you figured out as you were kind of talking with your customers and what's next? What should we do next? How else can we help you?
Yeah. I mean, it's at the end of the day, like our drivers, we hang out with them a lot. Mm-hmm. you know, whether we're on the phone with them, like just, you know, getting to know them or like moving loads, like these things start to bubble up, right? Like these conversations will just like happen where they're like mad about something, but it's not related to us. We'll just inquire further, like, what's got you so burned up today? Oh, my factoring company is doing this to me and it's really painful and annoying. I want to leave, but I'm stuck in this contract. And like, I just feel like the walls are closing in. And it's like, it shouldn't feel like that way for the people that are doing, I would say 98% of the work. They should have, you know, people like us, the companies that they're doing the work for should be like supporting them. And it should be like a pleasant experience. Cause like the word pleasant and trucking are not two words that have generally gone together ever. It's usually sort of like everybody lies to each other. Everybody hates each other. But like at the end of the day, they all work together still because it like has to happen. But nobody's like excited about it. Right. And we're trying to change that narrative a bit, at least from a broker to carrier perspective.
Mm-hmm. So how about drivers? I kind of want to touch on that. How are you finding them?
Trucking is much like the gold rush, right? Like if a gold rush starts, it's really, really good. But like there's a constant flood of new entrants, right? And so like even like the last 2 years, it was a big gold rush. So you had like a lot of new entrants joining the space, like from the, especially from the driver's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But that creates like a gluttonous oversupply. And so like the correction will be next year when like there's no freight to move and like half the trucking companies go out of business. This just happens like every 2 to 8 years, right? So like for us, like finding drivers, it's really been, you know, we use the traditional methods, right? So there are opportunities for us. You know, we have a carrier sales team that like goes out and sort of overlaps, looks at like what our network demand is. And they go out and get lists of carriers. They use load boards. They use the common anything that a traditional brokerage would use, like we're leveraging those services as well. But the opportunity on the carrier side for us has always been, well, sure, I can get a carrier. I can use the traditional methods that like a traditional brokerage would use, but it's actually our opportunity to like keep them in our network. And so for us, it's not always about acquiring drivers. Like that's, I don't want to say the easy part, but there's like a couple of ways we go about that, which is very traditional. Load boards, outbound calls, for a lot of referrals, we get a ton of carriers that like refer their friends. Like a lot of carriers like only trust things that their friends use, which are other drivers. But we focus more of our efforts on once we do get a driver, how do we actually keep them? And that's like the bigger lift because drivers have a lot of options. Just like, you know, if you're driving for Uber, you could drive for Uber or Lyft. You can actually both at the same time, right? Truck drivers can do the same thing. And so that's really the ticket, giving them what they need to keep them in the network quicker, whether that, you know, in our world doesn't always have to be a load, right? It can be some of those other value added services that we're wrapping into the portal that they work out of.
Nice. So kind of switching topics here, but where do you see the industry, you know, going as a whole?
The industry as a whole is definitely what you're going to see in the next 5 years is a lot of venture capital, like a lot, because you're sort of getting the, in 2018 and before, no investor wanted to touch our space. You had a couple like early believers in Cargomatic and Transfix and some other like supply chain. I mean, I always bring up these companies because before 2018, that was all the freight tech that existed. It was like five companies, right? That were like digital freight brokerages. And there was also, you know, your incumbent technology providers like, you know, McCloud and TMSs and SAP and Oracle, those guys, right? After 2018, it started to shift when like Uber came into the space and people started looking at it. Flexport's a great example as well. But then when the pandemic happened, that just put it in the news. And so now 2 years later, like you're seeing investors, you know, every VC I talk to, I just got a email from one today that is pure pharmaceuticals. And now all of a sudden they're investing in supply chain. What the heck does that got to do? You know what I mean? Like
hot topic.
Everybody's going to open that, right? And so I think over the next 5 years, you're going to see, although the market, you know, the current stock market and things like that, economy is sort of in like a weird roller coaster. You're seeing a whiplash of 2 years of saying, hey, this space is real. And venture capital is just trying to deploy a big chunk into this. And so whether that's going to change, I think it'll change the industry in the sense of like more innovation will happen. Like, I don't think every bet's going to work as well. You know, most companies will probably fail. But the fact that like we're finally diverting some capital resources to the market, you're going to see things that I don't even have. I have no idea what's going to be built, right? But you are going to see a lot of people building things in the space. I probably get an email from like a potential founder in logistics once a week from somebody I don't even know that's like, hey, you know, I'm former X at this company. I want to build something in trucking. you know, do you have 5 minutes or 10 minutes to jump on the call and just like go through some of these ideas that we have? So I think it's interesting. I mean, most of the ideas are not that great. I'm not going to lie. Like there's ideas that have been done before where I'm like, hey, don't do this. Like, think about it. Let me show you, you know, areas where this has not really worked. But like the fact that these like really smart people are like coming into the industry and just trying to do something, it tells me that this industry is going to look a lot different in the next 5 to 10 years, where you're going to have a lot more technology. You're going to have a lot more younger people in transportation. Traditionally, you know, logistics is dominated by, you know, middle-aged white guys. Like, let's be frank. That's what it is, right? Like in the supply chain space, right?
Yep.
And I think you're going to start to see a lot of younger, you know, fresh out of college people that are going to try to come in and do interesting things in the space. And like, that's what we need. We need new ideas. We need new people. We need new players. I don't want to go to a conference and see the same 100 people every single year, because like, that's not innovation. That's just grabbing beers with friends.
I bet it has been like that, right? For years behind, I bet. It
absolutely has. I mean, I've been in the space for a while, but like more networkly in the space, like since like 2018, and like these conferences are the same. I rarely meet new people at these things, and it's, you know, it'd be nice to get some new blood in the space. And that's what we're going to see with the venture capital fueling into the industry.
That's so exciting. Yeah. I completely agree with you. I feel like I even hear about younger and younger. I mean, I'm pretty young and people are just kind of stepping into it. So it's really exciting.
Yeah.
Well, sadly, our time is coming to an end, but I do have one last question. This one I haven't prepped you for, but let's say you could go back to when you first thought about starting your first startup. What would you tell yourself?
Oh, man. Two things. College is cheaper. That's the first thing, right? And the second thing is like, Chris and I have always had a problem with like naming our companies. Like they're just terrible names. You know, kind of going back, like thinking about like college would be cheaper. Like me specifically made a lot of mistakes. And like, I think that, you know, hindsight's 2020, we learned a lot, but I think that I probably, if I was to tell my kid, like, you're not allowed to do this until you go get 4 years of college. Like I didn't go to college, neither did Chris. Right. And I would want like that person to go get 4 years before they embarked on this journey. Like, don't do it when you're 18. I mean, if you have a great idea, do it. But like, understand, like, you are about to go from a kid to grown up in one day. Like, just take those 4 years and like learn, you know, meet new people, get out of your shell before you dive into like the entrepreneurial journey, because it's a 24/7 job. And like, you know, you kind of see like the hustle culture and stuff like that. Like, you can be as non-hustle culture as you want as an entrepreneur, but like, understand it's lonely at the top. And like, you're going to give up a lot of things that your friends are doing because you're going to want to be successful in your business, which you absolutely should. So I would just say college isn't that expensive. Go. You'll have plenty of opportunity after the fact to make whatever business you want.
I love that. Completely agree. Yeah. Definitely. Entrepreneurship is something totally different.
It is. It's a whole different experience and education that never ends. And it's good. But like I said, it's a long journey. It's not a sprint. So don't feel like you have to do it today.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all we're going to have time to cover. But before we wrap up, if people want to follow XO Freight's journey and keep up with you, where should they go?
XOFreight.com or LinkedIn, just XOFreight on LinkedIn. And then, you know, I'm on LinkedIn as well, the only Curtis Triber with a K. Feel free to reach out. Always happy to talk to people that want to talk about our space.
Perfect. Well, awesome. Thanks, Curtis, so much. It's been great talking to you, and I wish you and XOFreight all the best.
Excellent. Thank you, Taylor.